Now we're holding on page 58 in Bava Metzia, Ois Chofches. We learned last time that the Gemara had darshan a couple of psukim in Kapitel Kuf Dalet about wild animals roaming around at night. That refers to the Rishayim who roam around in all world, which is compared to night. And then La'asid Lavoi, the sun will shine, all the coast will be revealed, and they'll get what's coming to them. So now in this connection, the Gemara brings the following story. Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon Ashkachla hu paragavna. Pafagona, how you pronounce it. Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon one time met up with a certain official, who Rashi translates paragavna, as Memuna Shalmelach, an official of the king. Dekatofis Ganvi, this guy was arresting thieves. So he was exactly that. In other words, there were thieves, and this guy was like a detective or a police chief whose job it was to arrest them. And we don't know whether this guy was a Yid or a Goy. Anyway, Omalei, Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon says to him, Heichi Yachlis Lahu, how are you able to catch them? How are you able to overpower them? Lav kechev samisili, aren't they compared to wild animals which hide out by day and only go out roaming around by night? As the pasuk that we quoted, that the Gemara had quoted before, says that by night all the wild animals of the forest roam around. So they were like that. How are you going to be able to catch them because by day they're hiding themselves out? Meaning, in other words, Maharsha says, you know, before the Gemara had darshan that they roam around in the nighttime, meaning, in other words, in Olam Hazeh, which is compared to night. Now, Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon is telling in a more simple sense, by day they usually hide out. By night is when they're around. How are you going to manage to catch them? Ikadamri, others say, Mehai Kro Karmalei, that he pointed out a different pasuk. Yerev, also talking about the Rishoyim, Yerev Vamister Ka'aryeh Vesukai, they hide out in their, they hide an ambush in their lair like a lion in his thicket. So in other words, the same idea. They're always in hiding, and you're not going to find them on a regular basis. Duma shaklas tzaddikim shavkas rishi. How do you know? Maybe you're arresting the tzaddikim and leaving the rishoyim, because the rishoyim, the actual thieves, are very sneaky and very good at evading the law. So maybe the people that you think are the thieves are the ones who are actually innocent people, and they don't know all this trickery, and you end up arresting them. Now, granted, I mean, once they, you know, this guy's job is just to arrest them. His job is not necessarily, they're not necessarily going to be put to death because of that. There's still going to be a trial, but with the Romans ruling, you know, the trials weren't exactly always the fairest ones. So the guy says, "My Evid, so what should I do? Humina de Malkahu. I'm under orders from the king. I have a job to do. How else should I do it?" So Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon tells him, "Ta agamercha hechi tevin." Then fine, come. You want to keep your job? Then I'll teach you how you should do it. How you're going to catch the actual thieves? What you should do is go at 4 hours into the day, which is approximately 9 to 10 in the morning, breakfast time, go into a chanus. Chanus means a store, but in Gemara terminology, very often chanus means more like a restaurant or a diner or something like that. If you see a person sitting over there at breakfast and he's drinking wine, and in those days they drank wine throughout the day. It was like the way we drink water or soda. So fine, the drinking wine in and of itself is not suspicious, but the kanokit kosabiyode, he's holding the cup in his hand, and he's drowsy. Shoyl Ilavei, ask the restaurant owner, ask whoever about this person, what the deal with him is. Why at 9 or 10 in the morning should he be sleepy? Eat Surim and Abonanhu, if you find out that he's a young Talmud Chacham, Vinayim, and he's sleepy, okay, you can understand why. Akdumi Akdum Legirse, he got up early while it was still nighttime to review his learning. So now, by the time it comes to 9 or 10 in the morning, 3 hours into the day, then he's already 4 hours into the day, then already he's feeling tired. Eat Poyolhu, if he's a worker, then fine, the same thing. Kodim Ka'ovid Avidde, he may have gotten up early to do his work. What about Iavidte Valeria? What about if you find that he's the kind of worker who normally works by night, so then you would expect him to be sleeping by day. He wouldn't be in the restaurant having breakfast at 10 o'clock in the morning. Fine. You could say Radudi Radid. It's a reasonable thing, because what he might be doing by night Now, you might say, okay, but if he's working by night, how come they don't hear noise of work from his house? Because the answer might be that his work at night is a quiet kind of work, radudi radid, which is to make thin wires. Like you have the way the Pasuk describes how they made gold wires for the clothes of the Kohen, and by Yerakos Pachazov, they would beat out sheets of gold and then cut them into wires in the times of the Gemara. Now in the Pasuk then, in other words, it's describing that they would beat out the sheets of gold and then the kitzets, and then they would cut them into threads for the Choshen and the Ephod and the other big, and the other Godim of the Kohen Gadol. Here in the Gemara, Rashi explains that rather they would do differently. Because after all, the point is we want to find something which is quiet, something which he could be doing by night. Banging out sheets of gold is not going to be very quiet. What he does is he wants to make, he's going to be making needles, for example. So what he does is he takes metal and forces it through pieces that have finer and finer holes in them. So as the metal gets drawn through the finer and finer holes, it becomes thinner and thinner, and therefore you end up having very thin needles that you can make that way. So in that case, so if he's a night worker, the fact that people don't hear banging or anything from his house at night doesn't mean anything, because that could be the kind of work that he's doing, and therefore it's legitimate that now he's up in the morning and having breakfast and is already half asleep because he was up during the night doing that work. So far, so good. If any of those things happen, then you have nothing to suspect him of that he's tired in the morning. The Eloi, if none of the above, Ganvahu, then you have good reason to suspect that he's a thief. So why is he asleep? Why is he sleepy in the morning? Because by night he was ambushing travelers or digging into and tunneling into houses or whatever, and therefore in the morning he's tired. But Tafse, then go arrest him. Again, it doesn't mean that automatically on that basis you're going to be Mechayev and Misa, but at least at that point, bring him in for questioning. Okay. So the guy went and did that. Ishtama Milsa Be Malka. Eventually they found out about this at the emperor's palace, this advice that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon had given. Omru, so they said, as the famous expression, Kreina de Igurta, the one who reads the letter, Iulaheve Pravanka, he himself should be the messenger. If Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon himself is such an expert at ferreting out thieves, then we should appoint him to be the chief of police for this, instead of this other guy. Asuel Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, so sure enough, they called in Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon and appointed him to the position, the Katofis Ganvi V'Ozo, and he's going ahead and catching thieves. Now, this expression V'Ozo was interesting, that he's doing this on an ongoing basis. So, Iyun Yaakov points out, if it was a one-off thing, now here we're going to have Rabbi Yeshua ben Percha, who was actually one of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's Rebbeim, told him he shouldn't be doing that. Now, if it was a one-off thing, fine, you know, but if he's doing it on an ongoing thing, then it's not, then Rabbi Yeshua ben Percha is going to accuse him. How could he do such a thing? You're handing over Jews to be killed. Shalach le Rabbi Yeshua ben Percha, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Percha sent Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon a message. Choymetz ben Yayin, vinegar, son of wine. In other words, your father, Rabbi Shimon, was wine. He was a great tzaddik, but you, compared to him, are like wine that went sour. It's spoiled. So, in other words, basically, Rabbi Shua ben Korcha is telling him you're Rosha, the son of a tzaddik. Rabbi Shua ben Korcha, being Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's Rebbe, he's certainly entitled to call him whatever names he needs to get him to do the right thing.
This is Rashbi again?
Okay. This is Rashbi's son, Rabbi Elazar.
The famous Rabbi Elazar
ben Shimon, yeah. But nevertheless, Rabbi Shua ben Korcha said that he's doing wrongly. Later on, we're going to have in the Gemara a story involving Rabbi Shua ben Percha being Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's Rebbe. Yeah, so we're going to go on to say in the story that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was in fact a great tzaddik and wasn't doing anything wrong, but Rabbi Shua ben Percha didn't see it that way. So he called him Choymetz ben Yayin. Ad Moshe at the Moser Amoshel Alakenu LaHariga. How long are you going to be handing over Hashem's people to be killed? The fact is, some of these Ganovim are Jews, or some of these people that you're assuming are Ganovim are Jews. And granted, fine, you're not directly causing that they're going to be killed, but you're causing them to be hauled in by the government for questioning. And the Romans did not exactly were not exactly that friendly to the Jews during that period of history. So how could you do that? Sholach Lei, so Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon answers that, Koitzim, ani mechalem in akerem. You're comparing me to wine, and then you're comparing me to vinegar that came from wine. Well, you know what? I'll answer you in your own terms. I'm clearing the thorns from the vineyard. Meaning, in other words, that... So Maharsha explains like this. What causes wine to turn into vinegar? For one thing, when you have, there are thorns in the vineyard that cause that they then, the grapes don't develop normally, and therefore the liquid that you get from them doesn't have, doesn't become wine, and instead becomes sour and becomes vinegar. Well then, by that metaphor, I'm removing the thorns from the vineyard. So that I'm removing the Rishoyim from the vineyard of Hashem. Shalach Le, Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha says, still, Yoveh Bala Kerem Yichala Es Koitzam. Let the owner of the vineyard come and remove his thorns. In other words, leave it to the Eibishter to deal with them. Don't you be going and then giving Jews over and mastering them to the government, which is, as we learned a little bit about in Bava Kama, is a very serious avera. The fact is, lahalocha, it is brought, you're not allowed to master any yid, even a rosh or bal avera. So in that sense, Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha is speaking al pi halacha. Nonetheless, though, a couple of Rishonim point out, the Rashba, the Rivosh point out, we know that there's a concept in halacha based in makin v'oinshin shaloi min haTorah, that sometimes based in is given power to punish and even execute people when it's not strictly required al pi halacha. L'migdal milsa, it's called, in order to put a fence around things. When based in sees that a particular mitzvah that people are being very careless with, then they have the right to take extra strict measures against that, to stamp that out. So here, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon took the view that there's enough, gneva has become prevalent enough among some Jews that we need to make an example of them, even if that means handing them over to the government. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha said that this isn't necessarily the right thing to do in this case. It was anybody, but the fact is, among the people he's going to arrest are going to be some Jews. And apparently there were, as we're going to see in the following story. There was quite a bit of interesting discussion about this. One point in that connection is there's even an explanation that goes further than that. Not only is it an example of a migda milsa, but it's actually there's an explanation that these Jews could be considered roidfin. In the sense, when they're committing crimes like that, they're causing the Romans to look at all the Jews as criminals, and that had very serious consequences. So in that case, there is a halacha, and in the same halachas in Shulchan Aruch, it says you're not allowed to master a yid, but you have, when he's a roidif, when he's endangering the public, then there's more of a leeway too. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon considered them to be in the category of roidfim, and therefore he's entitled to hand them over to the government, whereas Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha disagreed with that. There's a lot of other interesting explanations on it as well. Another interesting, the Munkacher makes a fascinating point about it. He says, we know in the story in Masech the Shabbos, we know Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Elazar spent many years in the cave, and when they came out, they couldn't tolerate the idea that people are living normal lives and not being Osek Batorah constantly like they had been in the cave, and they're burning everything up that they see with their eyes, and then they spent another year in the cave, and Rabbi Shimon now is more able to tolerate this kind of thing, and Rabbi Elazar but Rabbi Shimon is still not, until Rabbi Shimon tells him, leave them alone, this is how the world functions. In any case, the Munkacher explains that Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha is telling Rabbi Elazar, look, I understand that you're not the kind of person who can tolerate this kind of evil among the Jewish people. But nevertheless, you don't have to be the one involved to be the one that's handing them over to the government. Yoveh Bala Kerem, you should leave it up to the Eibishter, rather you don't want it, then fine. Yerushalmi mentions that he told him, run away to a different country. Leave your job, abdicate your job, and go run away. So the same way, in other words, fine, you can't tolerate these, we're showing them around, that doesn't give you a right to go and actually hand them over. You can't stand it, then fine, leave. Where's Rabbi Elazar, and in fact, Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha is going l'shitosa, he points out the Munkacher, because we find in a number of places in Shas, where Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha is more willing to say that a person should be given as many chances, and many chances. For example, you have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, where the Gemara discusses over there, Machloikas Tanoyim, when a person does tshuva, is he going to be accepted by the Eibishter only if he did tshuva b'fahesia? What about if he only did the matmonius in secret? And Rabbi Yisroel ben Kocha says, doesn't matter, the Eibishter always accepts his tshuva. Shuvah bonim shuvim, erupam shuvay seichem. Even if the person still doesn't have is doing tshuva only in secret. So in the same way, he's telling Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, you have to give you should have to give these people a chance again and again. You hold the shitascha not to, but then at least don't be doing it yourself. An interesting vort on it also is from the Tovus Yaakov Yosef. He says, when we say Yoveh Bala Kerem, the Yichala Es Koitzav, who's the Bala Kerem? Poshet Pshat, as we understand, it means the Eibishter. In fact, there's Pesukim in Yeshaya that compare the Jewish people to Hashem's vineyard, and so he's saying the owner of the vineyard can deal with the thorns himself. the Toldos Yaakov Yosef says a vote on it. He's saying, no, you know what? You're the Balakerim. You have kotzim of your own, Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon. Remove those, and automatically the Rishoyim in the wider world will go away. But you don't have to go and be handing them over to the government to be prosecuted. Well, Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon didn't follow that, and he continued doing his job. Yom Echad Pogabe Ahu Koibis. One day he was met up with a certain laundryman, a Poshut Yid. Kariya Choymitz Ben Yayin. This guy called Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon Choymitz Ben Yayin. Now that's the same term Rebbe Yeshua ben Kocha used. But Rebbe Yeshua ben Kocha is a great Talmud Chacham, and even Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon's Rebbe, he has the right to use such a term against him. This Koibis has no right to use wording like that against the Talmud Chacham. Omar, said Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon, thinks to himself, Midachotzif Kolahai, this guy being such a Chutzpanyak, Mamina Rafiyahu. That means he must be a Rosha. Omalahu, so he says to his people, the policemen who are working under him, Tifsua, Tifsua, arrest him, arrest him. Levosad Nachdaite, later on, after Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon calmed down and realized, wait a minute, that's not a valid reason to get the guy arrested. Ozo Basri Leforuke, he went and followed where the guy had been taken to try and ransom him, Volemotzi, but he wasn't able to, it's out of his hands already. Koriale, so Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon applied to him, the pasuk Shoma Pivul Oshonai, the one who guards his mouth and his tongue, Shoma Mitzorais Nafshe, saves his soul from Soros. Who is he referring to? Rashi says he's referring to this laundryman. If he had kept his mouth shut and not said this expression, Chometz Ben Yayin, he wouldn't now be arrested and facing a death sentence. Marsha says it can also refer to him himself. Why did I have to speak up? Why did I have to tell my guys to arrest him? So, in fact, the Rif says over here it could be both really. First, when the fact that the guy was arrested, okay, but I'll still be able to ransom him. So therefore, it's not so bad. Now when he finds out he can't, and the guy's going to be sentenced to death, so now he says, after all, it's this guy who brought it on himself in a way by speaking up like that, and now there seems to be no hope for him. Well, in the end, Zakfua, they ended up hanging the guy. Come to see skiff of a kabachi. So Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon stood there under the gallows, and he was crying. He thought that he had an innocent person killed for nothing. Omrule, so they said to him, Rebbe, al yeda beinecha, you shouldn't consider it bad in your eyes, because you should know he really is a Rosha. Shohu uvnoi balu naira marosa b'yema kippurim. He and his son together had relations with a naira marosa on Yom Kippur. A naira marosa is the most serious kind of relations with an eishes ish. It carries the penalty of skila, where most other cases of eishes ish are chenek, which is much more lenient. And it was he and his son, which shows a greater degree of chutzpah, and it was on Yom Kippur, which shows an even greater degree of chutzpah. So Naira Marosa is the skila. We know that when there's no Dalad Mrs. based in, as was the case over here, because Rebbe Elazar ben Reb Shimon lived after the Korban, and as Gemara says in a few places, the Eibishter makes sure that a person who is chai of one of those Mrs. gets it in some other way. For example, one of the examples with skila, a couple of examples the Gemara gives with skila, well, you also have a concept called Kolon Skolon Nitlin. The Mishnah mentions in Sanhedrin that according to one opinion, anyway, it's not the halacha, but there is an opinion that anybody who gets skila also gets hanged afterward. Their body gets hanged afterwards. So here, where he was hanged, that it was a semblance of what he would have gotten as skila. So therefore, they're telling him the guy actually ended up getting what he deserved, milamayla. An interesting point, by the way, the Maharal makes a point. When we call the guy Kovis, why is it important for us to know what the guy's profession was? Now, the Maharal says, here's a general thing. Throughout Shas, in many places in Shas, you have stories involving a Kovis, a laundryman. Now, what does a laundryman do? He starts with clothes that are filthy, and he makes them clean. Therefore, koivus, he says, is always a metaphor in the Gemara for somebody who was a Baal Averus and did tshuva. So here, he says, so now he doesn't elaborate over here what it means, therefore, in connection with this guy. He was a Baal Averus, so maybe the idea is, first of all, it could be that he himself confessed before he died of what he did, and in that case, then he did So he did a degree of tshuva before he died, and therefore, and now Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon knows the truth, that he has nothing to be worried about, that he helped the guy accomplish his kapara. It could also be that other people told him what it would mean. In other words, maybe that person had done tshuva to the extent where now he's zoicha to actually have this kind of thing, where he's killed in a way that's a kapara for him, especially if he's killed by the goyim, which itself, a yid is killed by goyim, the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin, is a kapara for him. He's called, we have in Kapitel Ayin Tes of Tillim, Mizmor La'osaf, Nosnuas Nivlas Abad Decha, Machal Oif HaShemayim, Psar Chasidecha, L'chai Se'oret, that the bodies of Jews who were killed at the time of the Churban, that your servants and your Hasidim have been left to be eaten by the animals. And the Gemara explains over there that all these people in Yerushalayim, even though we find from the Nevi'im, many of them were outright Rishoyim, nevertheless, when they were killed by the Goyim and they weren't buried properly, now they all of a sudden they become Avodim and Hasidim of the Eibishter, because the fact that they were killed by Goyim is a kapara for them. Applies also to Jews killed in the Holocaust, applies to the Jews who were killed on Simchas Torah 2 years ago, and many other examples like that.
In Tfilas HaShachar,
isn't
the Kovas and the Rashbi in that story?
What? In
Tfilas
HaShachar,
we said? In the Kovas, the Rashbi, in that story where they
wanted to... No, you're talking about Tfilas Avis Rishus?
Yeah.
No, there's no Kovas mentioned. Oh, there is, that's true. There was a Kovas mention over there who said that, I'll go bring the news to Rabbi Yeshua that we made up. Yeah, that's true, yeah. I guess the Maharal would say that they're also the Kovas of the Baal Truva, yeah. So anyway, so the vote might be over here that according to the Maharal, so this guy did do enough tshuva that now he's zoicha to have a kapara in his death, where now he's able to be a ben olam haba despite the fact that he had done such a serious avera. And again, it also had the effect of putting Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon's mind at ease that now he's not worried that he caused an innocent person to be killed for no reason. Hiniach yode al bnei meyav. So at that point, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon put his hand on his stomach. The Omar, which is stomach, it doesn't just mean his stomach, it means his internal organs, which includes his heart, includes his kidneys, which the Gemara mentions in various places are what give a person, what give advice to a person. The Omar, and he says, Sisu, b'nei me'ai sisu. Be happy, my internal organs, be happy that you led me in the right, that you led me in the right, in the right direction. Umas status for lachem kach, madach, a case of suffix like this. I had only the only reason I thought that the guy is high of anything at all, that he's guilty at all, is because of his chutzpah, and that was only a suffix, which Marsha points out, at least the ones who are asleep at 10 o'clock in the morning in the restaurant, there's more of a solid reason to say that in fact, once we eliminated all the other possibilities, then they are ganovim, like he had told the original guy. But here, it was much more of a suffix, and nevertheless, kach, and nevertheless, the Eibishter makes it work out that I didn't cause an innocent person to be killed. Vadoris shalachem alachas kama v'kama. How much more so all the ones that were certain, all the ones that I was arresting until now, where I had a much more certain reason to say, such as again the ones who were sleeping in the restaurants. Alachas kama v'kama. How much more so that I can be sure that all of them deserved what they got, and I didn't cause anybody innocent to be killed.
That's what's called the gut feeling.
I guess in a way like a gut feeling, kind of, yeah. But it means, a tzaddik, in other words, has that even his gut feeling, that even his nefesh abahamis becomes a nefesh elikis and guides him in the right direction. And we know Taka, we know Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says on him in the Gemara in Sukkah, for example, he says that in Shnayim Haim, if there were only two bnei aliyah in the entire world, then there me and my son Rabbi Elazar. So yes, Rabbi Elazar is now saying, based on this, I can trust myself that I am, in fact, one of those bnei aliyah, and that, yeah, even my guts are directing me in the right direction, and that I'm not making a mistake. By the way, Marsha points out another point as well. At least Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon should consider for himself, okay, maybe the guy deserved Misa, but after all, when he's executed by the government, then they're also going to confiscate all his money. Shouldn't Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon be worried about that? That after all, his money should have gone to his Yoshim, who might not be Rishoyim. That is why they mentioned him, that it was also the guy's son who had done the Aveira together with him. So therefore, the son doesn't deserve to Yarshin that money any more than he did, and therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon feels good about that as well. So he says, Muvtach ani b'chem, I can be sure about you, about my insides, she'en rima v'seileya shalachas b'chem, that no worms or maggots are going to have control over them. After 120, my body will remain intact and won't be attacked by worms and maggots as it usually is. So Maharsha points out that actually later on in the story we're going to have in the next couple of days, the Gemara is going to tell what happened in the years after the Elizabeth of Shimon passed away, that one time a worm was seen coming out of his ear. So it's not like he remained completely immune to worms, but he remained immune to decay. His body didn't decay. The Gemara is going to go on to say, as we'll learn later on, that there were many years after he passed away before his body was buried, and during that time his body didn't decay. So that was so even though he's using the expression Rima Veseleya, he doesn't so much mean that. He means more, he's more talking about as far as decay. On the other hand, Ion Yaakov says, listen, you don't really need that. The Gemara explains over there, there was a specific thing that one time he had done wrong, that because of that the worm came out of his ear. Other than that, he's taka immune to worms and maggots as well. Nevertheless, Rav Elazar ben Shimon's mind was not at ease. A tzaddik never...
Whose ear did the worm come out of?
What?
Whose ear did the worm come out of?
Rav Elazar ben Shimon. Yeah. So nevertheless, tzaddik is still never completely sure of himself. We find here in last week's parasha, for example, Yaakov Avinu, Shema Yigra Machet. So there's always the concern that there might something still be something over there. So he decided to do a test. Ashtiyua Sama, the Shinta, they gave him a potion to put him to sleep. This was back before they had anesthetics, but they had whatever they had. The equivalent was to put somebody to sleep before major surgery. Vayalula base of the Shisha, they brought him into a marble building. Marble can be built in a way that's completely airtight. The Gemara mentions that in a number of places in Shas. It comes up even in Halacha, for example. A person is placed inside an airtight room, and he in a base of the Shisha, and he can suffocate over there. So then the person who puts him in there would be Chayiv Nisa for that. They would also, we find in various places in Shas then, that would be used, that such buildings would be used for an operating room. Because you don't want, you don't want as much as possible, you don't want outside air with all the germs in it to get in, so therefore they would do operations in such buildings. The Koru Lekrese, they cut open his stomach, have a Mapkimine dikula de tarbra, and they took out of him baskets upon baskets full of fat. Now, this can mean literally, the Gemara is going to say soon that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was a very fat, heavy-set person. It can also mean, and Maharal talks about it, may mean metaphorically. In any case, most of the Shimsha Tammuz of Av, they left that fat out in the sun during Tammuz and Av, during the height of the summer, and they didn't spoil. So Rav Elazar ben Shimon could use that as evidence. If that doesn't spoil, then his body won't spoil and decay after 120, after he's buried either. An interesting point, by the way, in this, an interesting point that the poskim in our generation talk about that you see from this Gemara. So what do we see? Now, this wasn't a medically necessary surgery. This was only, he was doing it in order to miyas v'daite, in order to make himself more at ease about...
He's alive?
Yeah, he was talking about he's still alive, yeah.
Ancient liposuction,
I guess, yes, you could say. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, though, it wasn't medically necessary. And usually, you know, we have a rule, we learned in Bava Kamma, that a person is not allowed to be choyvo ba'atzma, a person is not allowed to injure himself without a good reason. But we see that this, that he's doing liyasuvi daite, to make himself, to put himself at ease, to know that he hadn't made a mistake all those years as the chief of police, is a valid reason for him to undergo the surgery. Based on this, poskim of our generation, Torah Moshe Feinstein, and I think the Tzitz Eliezer, and a bunch of others talk about that based on that, plastic surgery can be mutter as well. On the same thing, a person feels themselves unattractive, whether it can be for shidduchim, whether it can be for other social reasons or whatever, there's a valid reason, al pi halacha, to undergo such surgery. You can't be choyvo ba'atzma, but we see this is one of the Gemaras that serves as a precedent that such a thing may be mutter.
Interesting.
So it doesn't mean we're not just talking stam frivolously, you know, but so we're talking about where a person has a genuine psychological need for it or something. Or again, for shidduchim or various things like that. So the Gemara asks, kol tarbi nami lo sriach. What's the proof of that? Fat doesn't spoil if you put it out in the sun, it melts. So how does that prove anything? And the answer is, kol tarbi lo sriach. Sure, the fat doesn't spoil. Shuraiki sunki masriach. But the red streaks that are in it do spoil, because there are bits of muscle and blood vessels and so on and so forth attached to the fat. Those will spoil. Hocha, afagab de'ikr, shuraiki sunki, here, even though you have those red streaks in the fat, loy masriach didn't spoil. So now he realized that this is a sign, minashamayim, that his body is immune to decay. Koryanafshe, so he applied to himself the posit, after Sori Yishkan Lavetach, my flesh will also dwell securely. Elsewhere, the Gemara brings in Rashi, Marsha refers to it over here, Gemara and Baba Basra, that discusses that there were various people in certain people in Jewish history whose body never decayed, among them the Avos and Moshe and Aaron and Miriam, and then the Gemara brings, according to one opinion, also David HaMelech, based on this pasuk after Sora Yishkin Levetach. So that's what Marsha says. The fact is, we're not listing Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon in that list, because since we see later on in the Gemara about that a worm came out of his ear, then that's reason to keep him out of that category. We do find, by the way, in later periods also, we find tzaddikim whose bodies were immune to decay long after they passed away. Among the examples are Rebbe Levi Yitzchak. They had to rebury him. The Rebbe Rashab. They had to move his body about 20 years after his esophagus, because the Russians wanted to pave over the Beis HaKvaris over there in Rostov. So under Rebbe Levi Yitzchak's direction, the Chassidim went over there and secretly dug up the body and to rebury it, and they by accident the Oren open, and they saw the Rebbe Rashab's face still looked exactly as it had when he was alive. Zevin tells in Sefer Chassidim a couple of stories along those lines as well that took place during the Holocaust. One of them involving Rebbe Lemelech Lezhensker, another one involving another famous tzaddik that also the Nazis Yimach Shemam opened up the graves and they saw there was still their bodies were still completely intact.
The Chida, after 200 years, they moved from Italy, and Rabbi Moshe Eliyahu said,
The Chida was also intact. Okay. Yeah. So, Bechlal, the Gemara has an expression someplace that says that that anybody, Kol Mishein Bekina, a person who's not jealous of another Yid, then Einatz Moshe Markivin, his bones don't rot. So nevertheless, the Gemara in Baba Basra says there's a certain special thing about these six or seven people that it mentions over there, that was Shalta Behen Rima. So apparently the idea is these tzaddikim, maybe to a certain extent, to some small extent, there could be something that's shoylet on them, but not the rest of them, whereas the six or seven the Gemara mentions over there is completely immune. Anyway, so Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon realizes again that his guts, his innards, had not skewed him wrong, and he was correct in everything that he had done. Now, the Gemara takes up the story again later on. The Gemara now is going to digress to talk about about other Chachamim and about stories involving other Chachamim. Later on, it's going to get back to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. So, but meanwhile, first of all, v'afra b'shmol b'rab Yosi motaki hai maisa v'yodeh. The same kind of thing happened with Rabbi Shmol b'rab Yosi, that he met up with a guy who was catching thieves, and the same kind of thing that he asks him, how do you know you're catching the right people, and Rabbi Shmol was also appointed as a police chief to catch him. Pogabe Eliyahu, this time Eliyahu met up with him. Omale, and he says the same thing as Rabbi Yishuv ben Korcha had said to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Ad Masa'at Amosu Amashel Elokeinu Lahariga. How long are you going to be handing over people of our God to be killed? Now this time Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi did not give the answer like Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Kotsim ani machalim and akerim, that I'm removing the thorns from the vineyard. So for one thing is because, like we said before, like the Munkacher had said, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon has this unique, complete aversion to Rishoyim, which, by the way, goes very well with the fact that he was from the Bnei Aliyah, because Alfred Eber points out in Tanya that a Tzadik Gomer has an absolute aversion, an absolute loathing, mius for evil, and then he can't tolerate even the tiniest bit of it, and therefore Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, being one of the Bnei Aliyah, is going to be like that. Rabbi Shimon ben Yosi is not necessarily on that level of a Tzadik Gomer like that, but he would have that intense hatred towards them.
Was able to tolerate it.
So Rishoyim was able somehow to tolerate, or not, maybe not actual Rishoyim, but at least people who are not constantly looting Torah. But yeah. So he didn't reply that I'm removing the thorns from the vineyard. But rather he answered, my Eved, what can I do? Hurma de Malkuhu. He answered like the original guy that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon met up with. What can I do? I'm under orders from the king. Amalei, so Eliyahu told him, Avucha Orek La'asya. Your father, Rabbi Yosi, at one point ran away to Asya. We don't know when that was, but Pashtus, it may have been Rabbi Yosi was one of the Chachamim who was alive during the years of the Shmad, during the years after the War of Bar Kochba, when the Romans were trying to stamp out Yiddishkeit in Eretz Yisrael. But Pashtus, it was during that period that he ran away to Asya for a period of time. Asya is usually identified as Asia Minor, which is basically modern day Turkey. And there's possibilities that maybe there's some other places elsewhere in the Middle East that are also called Asya. In any case, your father ran away to Asya when there was danger at Aruk Ludkia. So by the same token, you run away to Ludkia. Don't continue doing this job. Run away rather than continuing to do this. The Rif points out, Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, I'm not given that answer, that Hormina de Malkahu, precisely because he didn't want Rabbi Yishuv ben Karucha to tell him, run away. He wanted to be removing the thorns from the vineyard. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, it wasn't so much that he wanted to, he ended up doing it, and then therefore maybe, whether he actually ended up following Eliyahu's advice, it doesn't say, but in any case, yeah. So the Gemara continues. Now that we've mentioned both Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, let's talk about the two of them together. Ki havu mikli Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon b'hadi hadadi. When these two chachamim would meet together, they were both very fat, heavy set people. Have ayel bakr de tori beinaihu, an ox or a team of oxen, Rashi says, could walk between them, v'lo have a nagan behu, and not touch them. In other words, their stomachs stuck out so much that the oxen could walk underneath where their stomachs are sticking out and not touch them. It can mean, it doesn't have to literally mean that, it can be a bit of a guzma, Hakosef points out. Maral talks about the symbolism of it, that it means, in other words, like once you're talking about, in other words, their stomachs were much larger than normal people's, so much that the next thing you could compare them to in terms of size is the stomach of an ox, which is a very wide stomached creature. But not literally that it was that wide. Still, they were much larger in their stomach than normal people. So a certain Roman lady says to them, Rashi says, Matunissa doesn't just mean a lady, it means a goyish and noble woman, says, Bneichem enem shalachem. Your children are not yours, because it's impossible with a physique like that. You can't possibly have relations with your wives. So when your wives have children, they must be from other men. Now, of course, they could have just ignored her, but they didn't for reasons that the Gemara will explain in a couple of lines. There's different versions of what they answered her. One version was she answered them. One version was that they answered her, Shalahen Godo Mishalanu. Theirs is bigger than ours. Now that can mean that Rashi's first explanation is it means their stomach is larger than ours. Now, that doesn't really answer the question. That just makes the question stronger. Rashi's second explanation is that their taiva for Tashmish is greater than ours. So she asks, Kolshikin, well, then all the more so. According to the first explanation, then for sure, if you have big stomachs, and so do they, it's for sure impossible for you to do anything with them. And according to the second explanation, then if their taiva is greater and you're not able to be with them, then where else are they getting it? This is with her Goyashakah. She thinks this way. So now what did they answer her? Ikadamri hochi omrlo kiko ishgvura. So one version is that they replied to her with a pasuk, with a lashon pasuk, according to a man is his strength. Meaning, in other words, the larger the person, the larger his aver. So therefore, if we're physically larger, we also have a larger aver to compensate, and therefore it all makes up. Ikadamri hochi omrlo, another version, they told her, ava de chekes is a baser. Love presses the flesh, and therefore, since we both have such tremendous taiva, so therefore the flesh gets pressed away and doesn't stand in the way of the ava and of having relations. The Maharal talks about the symbolism behind the two answers over here. One, that they're basically, she takes the view, as many people have throughout history, that Tashmish is b'chol, it's a low-down, degrading thing. It's similar to the animals, b'cholo. So she thinks of it as, so in that case, then you have no way of doing it b'gashmiyus. So you must be doing it in ways that are osur. So they explain to her that, no, it's a great ruchniyistik, a holy thing, and therefore, ki ka'ish gurase, according to the person, is the strength, is the power that the Eibishter puts into them to have the ability to do that in a kedushadik way. And ava dechekas labasa, the ruchniyist that goes into it, sets aside all of the basa, all the gashmiyus, and makes it possible for it to happen. So the question is, why do they even bother answering her? The pasuk says, don't answer a fool according to his foolishness. Now, you have two psukim back to back in Mishlei. One says, anei ksilki valtei, answer the fool according to his foolishness. And the other is, altan ksilki valtei, don't answer the fool according to his foolishness. The Gemara explains in Shabbos that the difference is, if he's asking you in something of Torah, then answer him because you don't want him to think that he knows that he understands the Torah. Show him that he doesn't begin to understand what he's talking about. When it comes to mili d'alma, when it comes to things in the world, fine, let him say it's shus and don't bother. This is a matter of mili d'alma. Why are they even bothering to respond to her? And the answer is Shelo Lahotzi Laz al B'neim, in order that people shouldn't question their children. Because Taka, she's bringing up that point with her goyish style, that your children aren't yours. Other people are likely to wonder the same thing. So therefore, so they need to give an answer so that Sif Laz doesn't begin. Okay. More on this topic, just how large were their stomachs? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Eiver Eder B'Shmal B'Rabbi Yosi, Kechemes Bas Tisha Kabin. The Eiver of Rabbi Shmal B'Rabbi Yosi was like a bag that holds 9 kabin. What do we mean by the Eiver over here? So there are a lot of different explanations among the Mefoshim. It can mean their stomach. It can mean their Eiver Tashmish, as they just said, Kika Ishgvur Asai. And in that case, Tosfos points out, one reason to mention this is precisely Shaloi Lahotzi Laz. You see a person who's unusually large in their stomach, don't be Motzi Laz on their children, because you realize Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was larger even than that, and he still had children. So one explanation is that Eivre can mean their Eiver Tashmish. A couple of Rishonim talk about possibilities that it can mean the amount of food that he ate, or it can mean the Ritva, I think, says it that can be talking about, like, you see a large person, what do? You don't always measure their stomach to see what their actual size is. You measure the circumference of their upper arm or their upper leg, and from that you can get an idea of the size of the person. So according to that, Eivre would mean one of those parts of the body. If you measured Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi's upper arm or his upper leg, you would find that it's the size of a bag that holds 9 kavin. Amar Papa, Eivre did Rabbi Yochanan Kachemes Bas Chameshes Kavin. In turn, Rabbi Yochanan, who told us this about Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Papa says Rabbi Yochanan himself, his Eivre, however you define it, was like a bag that holds 5 kavin. V'amila Bas Sholosh Kavin, or some say that holds 3 kavin. The Rav Papa Gufe, Rav Papa himself, who's telling us this about Rabbi Yochanan, ki dekure dehar panoi, his aver was as large as the baskets or barrels that they used in Har Panoi, which is a place in Bavel where they made very large, they made large jugs or baskets. There's Gemara and Shabbos that implies that they held 3 kavin. Again, Tosfos says on one level this is telling us not to suspect that such people are not able to have children or anything like that. We see that these great chachamim were large like that. Don't make fun of people who are that size. And the Maharal talks about the symbolism behind it. There's Gemara in Nidorim that mentions that there are 10 main evorim that control the body. You have the eyes, the mouth, the 2 hands, the 2 legs, etc. And the 10th of them is the Eiver Tashmish. So now he explains that we're saying that Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi's was the size of 9 kavim. That represents that he was able to accomplish beruchnius with that, what most people accomplish with all the other 9 evorim combined. So in token of that, it's called 9 kavim. Then we're saying Rabbi Yochanan, now Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is a Tana. Rabbi Yochanan is an Amora on a lower level, so he's not able to accomplish as much, but he's able to accomplish the equivalent of 5 Eivarim, the 2 hands and feet and the Eivar Tashmish itself. And then Rabbi Papa, who belongs to a later generation, he's near the end of the Amoraim, so he's able to accomplish as much with that as 3 Eivarim. So each one, in other words, representing how much compared to how many of the other Melochim, the kings of the body, is he able to accomplish with his Aver and with what he brings into the world as a result of it. Yomiyem Mashiach Ugo'ola. He's making fun. Well, she could be asking a question, or she could be making fun. It's really the same thing, yeah. Yomiyem Mashiach Ugo'ola, Yudzayin Kislev. What is today? Yudzayin or Yudches? Yudzayin, yeah. Right. So now the Rebbe was talking about in Nunbeis, it's the Hechset Zeit, it's the highest time for Mashiach Tzidkenu to come. Hinezem Malach Mashiach Ba, and we already see a Me'ein, and we see the beginning of it, of the effect on the nations, as the Pasuk says about him judging among the nations and reproving them and telling them to do the right thing, and V'chitzu Chavoisim Le'itim, and they beat their swords into plow blades, and we see at this time that the Eibishter was putting into the minds of rulers of Umas Olam, Leib Malach the Sodom Yad Hashem, that they were doing just that. They were doing arms reduction treaties at that time, and they were turning arms into civilian and then beneficial uses for the civilian population rather than weapons. And Bechlal, I mean, this was a third of a century ago. We could ask, so what's the, if things improved since then? But in a way, yeah, you see more and more that governments don't really like the idea of war very much. It's become more and more. I mean, you still have, there still are wars going on, of course, but more and more there is there is this idea that it's not a good thing, though, and they'll try to get out of it whenever, and they'll try to get out of it, and are willing to make peace treaties when they can, and they find it to be advantageous, if nothing else, because it's better for business. And that's an example of a chitzu chavroisim le'itim, that they want all the dollars or whatever currency are going for arms should instead go le'itim, should instead go for plow blades and other peacetime uses. Okay, continuing with halachos of Ashkomas HaBoker. So we were talking about that a person says Negelwasser and then waits a little bit and then gets up while he's saying Moda'ani and then gets up. Now, Midina Talmud, from the Din of the Gemara, a person does not have to wash as soon as he gets up. He would be allowed to walk in between, and in the Din of the Gemara, he would also be allowed to touch his clothing before Netilas Yadayim. Nevertheless, the Zohar warns very much, the Alter Rebbe talked about this in Madura Basra as well, that you shouldn't even walk Arba Amos before Netilas Yadayim in the morning and not touch your clothes. So a Yara Shemayim should be Machmir according to the Zohar, which is why we have Negelwasser by our beds. So therefore, right away, a person gets up, he washes, even if he's laying down, it also helps him, this is a point that the Alter Rebbe did not mention in Madura Basra, he mentions over here, it also helps a person to save himself from Hitzas Zerah L'Vatala. Maybe because the idea is that as soon as he becomes Tohar, as soon as possible, and makes it less likely, I don't know. Rav Hanan Ben Akasha, Matzor, Kodesh,